You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.
My chair. Okay. Okay, this is a novel about Cambodia, ancient and modern. King Jay of Ottoman, their greatest king. They find a golden book written by him, and it gets stolen, and you get to meet a lot of Cambodians and other people. This is, in fact, the Western character in the book. And it's back when he's 16. And he's actually, he doesn't realize it, but he and the Cyclopus driver have fallen in love with each other. And they're going to have lunch together. Okay. Today, after the lycée, Luke descends to the courtyard with its mango tree. He wears his white tennis shirt, white shorts, and as he expected, Arne waits outside the gate. Le club comme d'habitude, Arne, he says. It's tennis day. Oh, monsieur, says Arne. For once he's not smiling. For once he stares moon-faced and unhappy. He glances up, glances down, and pulls in his lips until they are as thin as Luke's. Arne? Today's New Year. I wanted to do something with you. Luke knows what his mother would say. The boy only wants money. They need money. If you want to give him money, do so, but don't get too involved. You can't really help him, you know, unless you turn him into one of us. His mother has read Luke correctly as being soft-hearted. His mother is an old hand. All her Cambodian friends are rich. They have handsome sons who also go to the lycée, but they don't break Luke's heart by keeping their one pair of trousers folded under the seat of a pedal-driven taxi. Some of them harden Luke's heart by boasting of their houses and cars. He does not think that these middle-class Cambodians might be trying to establish equal grounds for friendship. Luke perhaps wants to pity his friends. In any case, whatever it is that has hold of his heart is far too strong. It grips like a crocodile. No argument possible. D'accord. It'll be nice to spend New Year with you. I can't think of anyone I'd rather spend it with.
Pardon?
Luke has to explain the complicated French. By the time Arne understands, both of them feel awkward and hurt. Arne's smile is not like the sun, but like the moon. One. Faded. I bought lunch. The thought of Arne buying him anything causes Luke an anguish of heart. Arne can't afford to buy anything. He has to rent the machine. He hardly eats. He unfortunately says, Arne, you shouldn't have done that. You should let me pay you for it. And that is a mistake. So they have a bit of misunderstanding, and it's all a little bit anxious. And Luke has an inspiration. Sometimes genius comes to Luke as if a powerful, spiny, but beautiful flower thrusts itself out of the heart of his life. Luke says, let me pedal you.
Luke!
No, I need the exercise. Really, I will pedal. Arne is smiling again and laughing. Luke stretches back and squeezes the brake, laughing aloud. Arne rises out of his seat, and the cyclo wobbles from side to side, slipping slightly. Luke bounds out of the seat and pulls Arne, who is weak with hilarity, forward to the wide, padded bench.
No,
laughs Arne. You are an old grandfather, Luke says in Khmer. I respect you. You should rest. I will pedal. Arne shakes his head at the overturning young French friend. He takes hold of Luke's pink, hairless biceps and holds them. He swings up onto the seat and looks over the back. Luke pedals. Shadows of trees flicker across his face. Women saunter past, trays on their heads. For some reason, Luke starts to sing a Françoise Hardy song about looking on while boys and girls love.
Tous les garçons et jeunes filles de mon âge marchent sur la route. Bum 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 bum.
He bellows as he pedals, grinning at Arne, whose face is turned towards his as steadily as the moon. His song mingles with one by Sin Sitomut, coming from some passing dancette. The voice of Sin is warm, the music trills like birds. The song mingles with the savors of roadside cooking, the gasp of bananas deep frying on mounds of earth baked into stoves, wafts of satay on skewers dripping over charcoal, and the sticky smell of all that fruit. The song harmonizes with the singing clatter of people speaking and the horse-like clopping of the feet of Luke's own people, strolling in shorts and white shirts more unbuttoned than they could ever be at home in France. The song flowers alongside the modern apartments painted cream, with bougainvillea purple along the tops of the walls, and the palm trees, and the sprinklers, and the uniformed children and the librairie crowded with books in both Khmer and French, and pootling little citron de cheveux, peeping horns as sharp and bouncy as Cambodian smiles.
I love it, thinks Luke as he cycles. I never want to leave. This'll be my home.
Goodbye, medical school. Goodbye, hospital. I will become a cyclopoose driver and live under the stars. Well, Arne can't really stop himself and suddenly leans forward and gives Luke a little kiss. And Luke is only 16, and it is 1967, so he concludes it was a familial kiss and chooses to ignore it. They find a lovely little pier. It's New Year's in Cambodia on Bungkak Lake, which in those days was not built all around, and they had these little piers. And they shouldn't be able to find a place to stop and have lunch on the pier, but they do, so they're sitting together, and they're cooking some food. And Arne has bundled up the lunch in his cremar. The cremar serves as his pajamas, his modesty patch, his headdress, and his shopping bag. He unties it carefully, gently, and there is sticky rice and vine leaves, soup in perfectly tied little bags that have spilled nothing, pork in sauce with vegetables. Luke tells him it is a wonderful lunch, and they sit and talk about the usual things, and Arne becomes overwhelmed because his unlikely dream has come true. The huge, beautiful, kindly barang is his.
Luke, I want to study, he says as he eats. Luke, I'm so happy. I know life will be just great. Everything in Cambodia is good now. We have our prince. Your people are okay to us, but the politicians go home, so now we can be friends.
Arne sways from side to side, as if to music.
We all live together and work hard, so Cambodian business, Cambodian factories, Cambodian music all do very well now. We'll become modern country. We'll join the world as friends.
Modern country, says Luke, and lifts his hand as if raising a toast. Friends. It's April 1967, and rice exports have collapsed. And the news says that in a place called Samlaut, somewhere near Battambang, the peasants are in revolt. The prince blames Khieu Samphan and the communists. For now, the song keeps singing in Luke's head. Lovers, the lyrics tell him. Don't fear, for tomorrow. Arne would be 58 now, thinks Luke, waking up in a tent in the dark, reeking of insect repellent. Where is he? Whenever Luke visits Phnom Penh, he peers at the motodops and elderly motoboys. He scans bus windows, taxis, and stalls in the central market. Most likely Arne would be using a different name now, and his face would be changed. Arne could be bald, fat, or sucked dry, skinny, but most likely, well, one out of three men died.
Mm. You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.